Herbie Hancock is a living legend today. The pianist, keyboardist, composer, and bandleader has a career that spans 5 decades and has earned him 14 Grammy Awards.
Hancock is known for pushing the boundaries of jazz, and his work influences R&B, acoustic, and electronic jazz.
He has a new memoir out detailing his musical life, his struggle with drug addiction, and his turn toward Buddhism. It's called Herbie Hancock, Possibilities.
Herbie Hancock joins us now. Herbie, welcome to the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, one theme I keep seeing in your book is that you, in music, embrace change and love to push boundaries. Where does that come from?
I think it's in my DNA. It comes from my interest in science. I've always been kind of analytical and curious about things. I like to know how things work and what would happen if you put this with that. So that innate curiosity has helped me along the way. And it also came into question when that curiosity, you know, sometimes curiosity kills the cat. And I talk in my book about a substance abuse problem that I had with crack cocaine. So that's going to shock a lot of people. But it's a reality that happened in my life, and I was able to overcome it. You know, and which I'm very proud of and very happy about. And the reason I'm writing about it in this book is because perhaps I can help someone else who is suffering with some kind of addiction, that you can do this. You can win over that dark side and never give up.
What got you through that dark side? What got you through addiction?
Well, thanks to my family and my decision to go to rehab, and to the Buddhism that I've been practicing now for 40 years. At the time, it was 20-some-odd years that I've been practicing Buddhism, but that really, really kind of helps solidify my resolve. And, I mean, that's really what it took for me to overcome that demon in my life.
Well, speaking of Buddhism, I wonder, I'm going to make a connection. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. You've always been fascinated by improvisation and music. You've always done it. And I think of improvisation, when it's done well, as this transcendental moment where the brain and the body are working in harmony. Do you see a link there to your Buddhist practice?
Yes. Because really, music is about life. Music isn't about music. And so if I just buried my head in music books and constantly just kept in earbuds listening to music, that can only help me go so far. But because Buddhism really helps to clarify your life, clarify your perception of yourself and your relationship with the world around you and the people around you, helps to develop the priceless jewel that is your life. And those aspects of life that you cannot buy, which are compassion, wisdom, courage, integrity, respect for others, those kinds of things. I mean, that's when Buddhism really comes into play. And so that affects the whole of your life, and consequently, it has affected the way I even look at music. I look at music now, I think about things like purpose. Mm-hmm. I never used to think that way before. But, I mean, it's a much larger vision that I have now than I did before I began practicing Buddhism.
Right. Music has the potential to be self-absorbed or technical. And you write that Buddhism made you think about others, other people, through your music. How does that show up, though, in what we hear you play?
Because I'm not thinking about just the notes that I'm playing, or I'm not thinking about, oh, what is the bass line that I'm going to start with. I mean, those things are not the uppermost elements in my mind when I'm actually playing music. I'm thinking about connecting with people. I'm thinking about sharing bit of the clarity that I perceive in life through my practice of Buddhism. I think about the fact that I would like to, from the stage, help to encourage others to feel a sense of the importance of we and not just the importance of me. Of course, the me is important, but it's important as part of the we. Hmm. I mean, those kinds of things really come from my Buddhist practice.
Well, I want to walk through a few moments in your career, and I want to start with your first audition with Miles Davis. Now, you were established. You'd played with some huge names already. You'd been around the scene, but Miles Davis was already a towering legend. What was going through your mind? What was it like when you sat down the first time to play for Miles Davis?
I was scared. I was kind of terrified the first time I played for Miles Davis. Actually, the first time, Donald Byrd, great trumpet player who discovered me and brought me from my hometown, Chicago, to New York, and really nurtured me. He got my first record contract. He's the person that told me to keep my own publishing, and he showed me how to create my own publishing company. He's the one that actually brought me to Miles Davis's house back in the early 60s. And to meet Miles, and what happened is, as he suspected, is Miles asked me to play something, and I felt very very nervous, and so I decided to play a ballad. I didn't want to play anything up tempo because I thought, no, I'm too nervous to do that. And anyway, what Miles said after I played, maybe it was Dollar by Starlight, or something, the My Funny Valentine, maybe. He said, wow, nice. He said, nice touch. And I was thrilled that Miles gave me that kind of compliment. I had no idea at that time that maybe a year later that Miles would call me and ask me to be in his band.
You ended up playing on the album Seven Steps to Heaven and then a lot more with Miles. It took a while to understand that you were actually in Miles' band, though, even after playing with him for a while.
Miles never said you were auditioning or what. And I kind of thought that him asking us to come over to his house every day for 3 days was an audition for being in his band. And this is what I had been led to believe. But Miles said, we're going to make a record. So although he was just specifically talking about making a record, in fact, I was in his band.
One track that moved me very much from the album Sound System, Karabali, percussion, vocals, but then it's mostly just you and Wayne Shorter making joyous music. Can you talk about playing with someone you know so well, a friend, and sharing that moment with someone?
Oh, Wayne Shorter. Wayne Shorter is like Yoda. Right now, he's 81 years old, and he's at the top of his game. He has expanded into orchestrating symphonic music with his quartet, and it's a whole new direction that you cannot pin a particular genre label on. So he's carving out new territory in music, and I have so much respect and love for him, and I learn from him every day.
Now, another moment that was pivotal for you, it sounds like, you played a concert with the Pointer Sisters. Your band and their band shared the bill. How did the Pointer Sisters change the way you thought about your music?
Well, the Pointer Sisters and me, we had the same manager. And the manager had gotten us a gig at the Troubadour in Los Angeles. And the Pointer Sisters were an opening act to my band. Now, my band was a very far-out, spacey, kind of untethered jazz group. And the Pointer Sisters were highly influenced by music from the sound of the 30s. But they were young and energetic, and they were fun. And they had, you know, the clothing that they wore was part of their show. I mean, they put on roller skates and anyway, what they did was fun for the audience. What we did was heavy for the audience, and the audience loved them. And I learned a lot from them. Instead of being intimidated by their show and their presentation, I started to think, what is it that I can learn from them, and how can I translate that into something that can help cut the barriers between this music that I thought was valuable to present to the listeners. What can I do to open up those channels so that people can really hear what it is that we're doing? They were a big influence in me looking at a bigger picture than I had perceived before.
One of the results of that was the album, the Headhunters album, and the song Chameleon. What was it like when you found out how that was selling the first week?
I couldn't even compute that. I couldn't quite fathom what that meant, and because those kinds of sales were never in my radar before. it took quite some time before I realized what was really happening. But of course I was extremely pleased that we were getting the reaction that we were getting. Frankly, on stage, we were all having fun. Hmm. We were enjoying the music we were playing and enjoying the challenges that we were setting up musically, and it was, in a way, I was just thinking that, in a way, it was like sports, you know, when you're perhaps playing tennis with someone. I mean, you're opponents, but not really. You're having fun challenging each other, and consequently, you're exercising, you're helping your body. And that's a kind of physical growth and mental growth that you're having with that kind of experience. And maybe that's a kind of comparison to my experience with Headhunters and my experience with music in general.
Herbie Hancock, this has been a high point of my year. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Herbie Hancock is a celebrated pianist, keyboardist, composer, and bandleader.